The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payton for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Associated Press, Religion News Service, and BBC News. Our first article was published by the AP on January 22, written by Tiffany Stanley, Darlene Supperville, and Gary Fields, entitled Trump Demands an Apology from Bishop, who asked him to have mercy on LGBTQ plus people and migrants. Washington. President Donald Trump on January 22nd demanded an apology from the Episcopal Bishop of Washington after she made a direct appeal to him during a prayer service marking his inauguration to have mercy on the LGBTQ plus community and migrant workers who are in the United States illegally. Referencing Trump's belief that he was saved by God from assassination, the Right Reverend Marianne Budd said, "You have felt the providential hand of a loving God in the name of our God. I ask you to have mercy upon the people in our country who are scared now." After he returned to the White House, Trump said, "I didn't think it was a good service, and they could do much better." But later, in an overnight post on his social media site, he sharply criticized the so-called bishop as a radical left hardline Trump hater. "She brought her church into the world of politics in a very ungracious way. She was nasty in tone and not compelling or smart," said Trump, a Republican, adding that Budd didn't mention that some migrants have come to the U.S. and killed people. Apart from her inappropriate statements, "The service was very boring and uninspiring. She's not very good at her job," Trump said. "She and her church owe the public an apology." A cathedral spokesperson did not immediately respond to an email request for comment. The Trump administration has already issued executive orders rolling back transgender rights and toughening immigration policies. The Washington National Cathedral Service was largely focused on national unity. Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance and their families attended, along with House Speaker Mike Johnson and Trump's Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. In her sermon, Budd said they gathered to pray for unity as a people and a nation, not for agreement, political or otherwise, but for the kind of unity that fosters community across diversity and division. She added, "Unity is not partisan." Evangelicals were at the service, but not on the program. More than a dozen religious leaders spoke during the interfaith service, including those from Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, and Hindu traditions. Notably absent from the invited clergy with speaking roles were conservative evangelicals, who are among Trump's strongest supporters. Nonetheless, some of these evangelical supporters were in the pews. In attendance were Robert Jeffress, a longtime Trump supporter and pastor of Dallas First Baptist Church, Paula White Kane, a televangelist and key spiritual advisor during Trump's first term, and Lorenzo Sewell, the pastor of Detroit's 180 Church, who gave a spirited benediction at the inauguration, a new kind of inaugural prayer service. The Washington National Cathedral has hosted 10 official inaugural prayer services for presidents of both major political parties. The tradition dates back to 1933. The latest service had a different emphasis than previous ones. Its focus was on the nation instead of the new administration, a plan made before Election Day. "We are in a unique moment in our country's history, and it is time to approach this differently," said the very Reverend Randy Hollerith, Dean of the Episcopal Cathedral, in an October statement. "This will be a service for all Americans, for the well-being of our nation, for our democracy." The text and songs revolved around themes of compassion and togetherness, including a reading from Deuteronomy 10, verses 17 through 21, which speaks of taking care of orphans and widows and all who are in need. Sermons at inaugural services have often been given by ministers aligned with the incoming administration. In 2021, the Reverend William Barber, a progressive civil rights leader, preached before President Joe Biden, a Democrat, at the cathedral. Bud, who gave this year's sermon, has joined other cathedral leaders in criticizing Trump previously, rebuking his radicalized rhetoric, and blaming him for inciting violence on January 6, 2021, when a mob of his supporters attacked the U.S. Capitol in an attempt to keep him in power. Bud was outraged in 2020 after Trump staged an appearance in front of St. John's Episcopal Church, which is near the White House. He held up a Bible after the area had been cleared of peaceful protesters. Her sermon, directed at Trump on Tuesday, provoked a lively reaction on social media. Austin Evervy, a biographer of Pope Francis, wrote on X that the bishop named the truth when she spoke to Trump in Vance. "Their expressions of fury and discomfort suggest she nailed it," Ivory said. Jeffress, in contrast, posted on X that Bud insulted rather than encouraged our great president, and that there was palpable disgust in the audience with her words. Music made for Trump. The one part of Tuesday's service that seemed tailor-made for Trump was the inclusion of opera singer Christopher Macchio, who also sang the national anthem at the inauguration. The tenor sang Ave Maria, a favorite song of Trump's, and one that Macchio sang at a Trump rally and the Republican National Convention. Before the service began, Macchio performed hymns like How Great Thou Art, another Trump favorite, and Hallelujah, written by Leonard Cohen. As the prayer service neared its end, Trump joined others in singing America the Beautiful. Trump also thanked many of the clergy members who participated as they processed past him, except for Bud, whom he did not acknowledge. Now a related opinion piece that was published on January 31 by the Religion News Service, written by Catherine Kaledas, who is a research associate at the Institute of Orthodox Christian Studies in Cambridge, England. "Bishop Bud went viral because she showed us what's wrong with American religion." In the weeks since Bishop Marianne Budd, the Episcopal Bishop of Washington, D.C., delivered a sermon at the National Prayer Service the day following President Trump's inauguration, the impact of Budd's plea to the president to show mercy to immigrants and LGBTQ plus Americans continues to make news. Pastors across the country read the bishop's words from the pulpit last Sunday, even non-religious Americans and Orthodox Christians like me have been praising Bud, and the Episcopal Church has reported an uptick in curious newcomers and returning members. Meanwhile, a House resolution condemning Bud's sermon has been gathering support among Republican members of Congress. Few have asked, however, why Bud's sermon made such an impression. For Christians, it held up an alternative to the one hawked by the Christian nationalists now holding the levels of power. But it also reminded many Americans what public religious faith looked like in America's not-so-distant past, when the Episcopal Church, once known as the Republican Party at Prayer, was the de facto faith of the American ruling class. The Anglican tradition came to American shores with the English colonists. The Church of England's first American church was built in Jamestown in 1607 as the state church of the British Crown, which proved a serious liability after the American Revolution. The First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution forbade the establishment of any religion in government interference in religious life, a radical step both then and now. The results were radical indeed. In the Second Great Awakening, 1795 to 1835, the newly Christian Episcopal Protestant Church struggled to adapt to America's democratic and entrepreneurial religious landscape. The Holiness, Restoration, and Adventist movements all took shape in this period, as did the uniquely political character of American evangelicalism, which began to enlist the power of the state to control public morality. Amid this fruitful chaos, the Episcopal Church slowly found its way by the middle of the 19th century. Though Methodists and Baptists were more numerous, and preachers of other traditions more famous, the Episcopal Church secured its position as the faith of America's ruling class and the public face of America's civic Christianity. Flexible, moderate, and reformable, it was a faith for a democratic nation, defined by progress and change, and not incidentally, it presented a theological and liturgical via media between Protestant rulers and an increasingly Catholic populace. Though America would never have an established church, the fact that the nation was gathered at the Washington National Cathedral, an Episcopal cathedral, for the post-inaugural prayer service is a legacy of this history. The emergence of the religious right beginning in the 1960s changed all that. The product of social changes of the mid-20th century, the religious right owes its existence, as such, to Southern evangelical rage at the civil rights movement, as it does to conservative Catholic anger at the Second Vatican Council. The alliance of old enemies still prospers by invoking common fears. But the religious right was also an implicit attack on the character of America's civil religion, seeking to conform its shape to evangelical Protestantism and its theology to Catholic integralism, an international movement that advocates for the establishment of what are, in essence, Catholic theocracies. The religious right's greatest success, on which all its other success has relied, has been in replacing the moderate, adaptable, and tolerant theology of mainline Christianity with this idiosyncratic version of evangelicalism, advancing, as the political right has, less on Christian love than exploiting intolerance and bigotry. The results have been disastrous, paving the way to a triumph of white Christian nationalism. On the other side, the liberal, secular, democratic side, there is a strange fantasy that the negative influence of these extreme right religionists can be somehow pressured out of the public square through the separation of church and state promised by the Establishment Clause. This group seems to hope that slash-and-burn anti-religious religiosity will somehow guarantee that religion plays no role in the decision-making of voters. Quite simply, this is not going to happen. France, with its tradition of laïcité, has come closest to achieving this model. But as France has become more multicultural, the limits of laïcité have been exposed as never before. In most European countries, secularization has been achieved not by pushing religion out, but by establishing it. As much as progressives may hate to hear it, established churches in Europe have provided a moderating check on religious belief and expression. American religion has grown so radical, in part, because there is no standard to which it can be held. Of course, an established church is inconceivable in the American tradition, but this effect of established churches in Europe should be an important cue for those concerned about the American dilemma. For a better part of American history, including America's most prosperous and progressive period, the Episcopal Church filled this role. Extremists could not triumph as long as that standard was visible and credible. This is why, after Bud's sermon, Christian nationalists of all stripes, evangelical, mainline Protestant, Catholic, and Eastern Orthodox, were so vitriolic in their attacks on the Episcopal Church. An empowered, visible, and public Episcopal Church is a genuine threat to their power and the means they've used to seize it. Now, an article from the Religion News Service written by Jack Jenkins entitled LDS Church, Members Should Care for the Needy Regardless of Immigration Status. In a rare comment on current political affairs, The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints issued a statement on January 30, reaffirming its position on immigration, adding to a growing chorus of religious voices challenging President Donald Trump's rhetoric and policies barring entry to the U.S. The statement, "Church Reaffirms Immigration Principles, Love, Law, and Family Unity," outlined three principles that guide the church's approach to immigration and appeared in part to offer a theological rebuttal to Trump's hardline immigration policies. Beginning with, "The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints obeys the law," church officials followed by saying, "We follow Jesus Christ by loving our neighbors," and "The Savior taught that the meaning of neighbor includes all of God's children." The statement continued, "We seek to provide basic food and clothing, as our capacity allows, to those in need, regardless of their immigration status. We are especially concerned about keeping families together." Since taking office, Trump has virtually frozen the U.S. refugee program known as USRAP, and has rescinded an internal government policy discouraging immigration raids in sensitive locations, which includes houses of worship. During his campaign for president, Trump promised to carry out the largest number of deportations in U.S. history. Thursday's statement is not the first time Trump's actions have prompted the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to depart from the custom of avoiding pointed political commentary. In December 2015, after then-candidate Trump proposed a ban on all Muslims entering the country, the church issued a statement declaring its neutrality in politics, but said it is not neutral in relation to religious freedom. The church spoke out again after Trump's election the following year in regard to an executive order banning refugees from seven Muslim countries. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is concerned about the temporal and spiritual welfare of all of God's children across the earth, with special concern for those who are fleeing physical violence, war, and religious persecution, read that statement. The church urges all people and governments to cooperate fully in seeking the best solutions to meet human needs and relieve suffering. The church also issued a statement condemning violence and lawless behavior after supporters of Trump stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. The church's latest statement adds to a growing list of religious organizations and faith leaders condemning Trump's immigration policies. On his second day in office, Bishop Marianne Budd, the Episcopal Bishop of Washington, delivered a sermon in which she pleaded with the president to have mercy on people impacted by his policies, including immigrants. The next day, a statement by Archbishop Timothy P. Broglio, president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, described several of Trump's executive orders, including his actions regarding refugees, as deeply troubling, efforts that will harm the most vulnerable among us. The USCCB has also joined other Catholic organizations in condemning the president's decision to rescind the sensitive locations policy. Earlier this week, a slate of Jewish organizations and communities, including the Union for Reform Judaism, the largest Jewish denomination in the country, signed a letter urging the president not to enact widespread persecution of immigrants. And a collection of Quaker groups filed a lawsuit on Monday alleging that rescinding the sensitive locations policy violates the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and their First Amendment right to freely assemble. Trump and his supporters have remained defiant. Trump dismissed as nasty in tone Bud's sermon, and Vice President J.D. Vance, a Catholic, suggested in an interview with CBS that U.S. Catholic bishops are advocating for immigrants and refugees because they're concerned about the bottom line. Our next article was published by the AP on January 30 and written by Joey Capoletti. Michigan priest has license revoked by church after mimicking Musk's straight arm gesture. Lansing, Michigan. A Michigan priest had his license revoked by the Anglican Catholic Church after he mimicked a straight-arm gesture performed by Elon Musk during a speech earlier this month that some have interpreted as a Nazi salute. Calvin Robinson, who is listed as the priest in charge of St. Paul's Anglican Catholic Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, performed the gesture at the end of a January 25 speech at the National Pro-Life Summit in Washington, D.C. On Wednesday, the Anglican Catholic Church posted a statement that said Robinson's license in this church has been revoked after he made a gesture that many have interpreted as a pro-Nazi salute. While we cannot say what was in Mr. Robinson's heart when he did this, his action appears to have been an attempt to curry favor with certain elements of the American political right by provoking its opposition, the statement read. We believe that those who mimic the Nazi salute, even as a joke or an attempt to troll their opponents, trivialize the horror of the Holocaust, it continued. Musk's gesture that Robinson was mimicking came in a January 20 speech during celebrations of Donald Trump's presidential inauguration. Musk slapped his hand on his chest, extended his arm straight out and up with his palm facing down, and said, "My heart goes out to you." At the close of Robinson's January 25 speech, he quoted Musk saying, "My heart goes out to you," before mimicking his straight arm motion. In a statement posted to his Facebook page, Robinson said, "In case it needs saying, I am not a Nazi," and that the gesture was a joke. Robinson is from England and in the past has been outspoken about his conservative views, according to a biography on St. Paul's Anglican Catholic Church's website. Our last piece was published by the BBC News on January 23 and written by Steve Harris and Ethan Gudge. Trans priest felt God couldn't possibly love me. "I really felt that there wasn't a place for me in the church," a transgender priest has told the BBC. Reverend Robin Golden Hahn was ordained at the Church of England in 2023 and now serves at St. Aldhelm's Church in Poole. She had previously been a stonemason before a midlife crisis in her 40s ended with her transitioning. "I worked as a stonemason in very many different capacities, but laying those tools aside and coming into ministry, that in itself has been another transition," she said. "In my wildest dreams, I never ever would have imagined that I would have been ordained and become a priest. I think I was struggling with a lot of my own demons, a lot of my own issues, and I really felt that God couldn't possibly love me and there couldn't be a place for me within the church. Kindness and love." The 48-year-old, originally from Wells in Somerset, had previously been married with children. But when she reached the age of 40, one life came crashing to an end. "One winter, I got this terrible, terrible flu, and I thought I was dying, and I really felt a sense that, actually, I've had enough now," she said. "As I recovered, I realized that I simply can't go on beating myself up like this. And that was the beginning of the healing of my relationship with God. Not being angry with God for being trans, but actually accepting, okay, well, that's the way you've made me. So I have to do something about that, and I have to live with that reality. In the hope of improving her relationship with God, Reverend Golden Hahn decided to pursue a life in the ministry and was ordained as a priest in July 2023. She said her personal experience in the church since her transition has been unremittingly positive. In my youth, I really felt as if I was wearing a suit of armor, Reverend Golden Hahn told the BBC. Yet when I was courageous enough to take that suit of armor off, I found that actually people responded with kindness and love when I was willing to put down my own defensive shield. Then I was able to hold out my arms and hug the world and receive this love and the hugs that the world had to offer me. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll listen again next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.